All right, so it looks like we are live. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Awakening Consciousness with Asher and Jesse. And like the title of the show suggests, we are back to talk about all the stuff. So yeah, it's been at least a few weeks since we did a show together. I've had a couple interviews in the meantime, and I think you had one or two or something like that. But yeah, just been really busy. So what have you been up to these days?
Yeah, it's been it's been a fun time, man. I've been sort of, as I'm always saying to my team, we're in the vortex. it's been a whirlwind. It's like the walls have just all come down. And I've gone through all these sorts of transformational experiences, you know, the shamanic sort of journeys, which have kind of concluded. I can't say fully concluded, right? Because everything's ongoing. Everything's an ongoing journey till death, and then new journeys begin, I think. So, you know, definitely not concluded in that way, but it's sort of, you know, it's sort of concluded at least a phase of kind of a healing phase for me. And, you know, as a result of sort of these things and these, you know, what I've been able to do. And I think that coincides very strongly with the time we're in. I'm just in a really good place where I'm able to just kind of have all my energy and all my resources at my disposal. And that's fun for me. And I haven't been able to go like that in a lot of years. So I've just been going. So we're really in the whirlwind of activity, both on all fronts, really. So I've got, you know, 7,000 balls in the air. They're all exciting balls and fun balls. And all right, I should stop with the playing with balls metaphor. Just been doing it. I mean, I was down yesterday. Yesterday, I went down to Zapotillo, which is an area about 4 hours or so from where I live here in Vilcabamba. That's really fascinating to me for agriculture. And I got back about 3 o'clock in the morning, 3:30 in the morning last night, up at six and rocking. So told you I'd record today. So here I am. Got basketball in about an hour and a half. Looking forward to that. Keeping the exercising going. Trying to keep that work-life balance a little bit as I you know, go 100 miles an hour. But it's really amazing. It's just sort of the whole confluence of events has just sort of descended on this valley and our businesses and what we're doing. And it's just, gosh, it's as fun a time as I've ever had.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. And I know, like, we're kind of both maybe a little bit tired. So the energy levels are maybe a little bit down, but I've heard a little bit about what you're doing and it sounds pretty cool. So, so getting to sort of the world events, the world around us, I was kind of thinking in the last couple of weeks that they've moved on to a new part of the show. And that's sort of the economic side of things. You know, we've gone through a disease phase that lasted about 2 years and then seemed to sort of fall off a cliff once they weren't able to keep that narrative going. And now we've moved on to sort of an economic phase. And so I think the high level story of that is there's a ton of debt out there. The world is, you know, governments are in a ton of debt. People are in a ton of debt. And for the longest time, or for number of years, they've kept interest rates at rock bottom price, at, you know, as low as they could. And recently, the Federal Reserve started raising interest rates, and that has sort of sent the economy into, you know, into some questionable territory. Like, you know, stock prices were at all-time highs, and now they've come down, I think, probably 20%. So I think we're technically in a bear market. I think that the stock prices in general didn't reflect the underlying fundamentals of the economy. And now,
right. You just say that like in your understated way. Like, right. Yeah,
right. So in other words, the inflation that you and I had been talking about for years, was seen in asset prices, not in retail, in the price of retail goods. And now we're starting to see it reflected in retail goods. And so you have a sort of, like you were saying, a confluence of events where stock prices are coming down, the price of retail goods are going up, shipping price, gas prices are going up, all that stuff. So you have people are feeling less wealthy, you have a slowing down of the economy, and you have higher prices. So I think it's sort of called stagflation, where you have rising prices, but wages and economic activity is not increasing. So it's kind of a, it can cause a lot of issues. I think they had a similar situation in the 70s where they had to raise interest rates to get ahead of inflation, and that caused a lot of hardships. And so they raised interest rates, I think, 50 basis points. I think it was 50 basis points. And that basically, it made everything like fall off a cliff. And I think we've seen it in our business, and people are seeing it across the board where people are just holding on to their money. And so, we're going to, yeah. Do you have any thoughts on that before I continue?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's just sort of what we've all expected, right? Is playing out the way we all expected it to play out, So, yeah, I mean, the end game, I think really, I don't know if it's the end game, but, some aspect of the end game, is interest rates going up, because you can't, you talked about the 70s, right? But we were at, a hundredth of the debt level in the 70s that we're at now, right? A thousandth, I have no idea, but, some minimal tiny fraction of the debt level that we're at now in the 70s. So there isn't any way to go through this as like a normal cycle, right? And you mentioned, that the sort of health stuff is over. Well, and I know you don't mean that it's over forever, but even in that context, right, we've got monkeypox, the comedy show goes on. It's too good to be true almost. And at the same time that, again, this is like all the dark stuff. It's like, who cares what these assholes are doing? But, the World Health Organization is sort of all of these countries in unison have sort of voted to give the World Health Organization a level of control over their, basically to give them sort of unilateral decision-making power inside these countries when it comes to pandemics. So it's just a continuation, of course, of the loss of sovereignty that, the march towards the one world, government that's been going on forever. And then I think part of that, some of those laws in those countries, which the laws are very similar in each country, of course, is that there has to be some sort of declaration of a pandemic within some period of time, blah, blah. So then monkeypox rolls out, and we'll see where that goes, if it's just a blip or if it's hysteria. I kind of hope it's hysteria just because it's so funny. It's like, yeah, the U.S. is a house of cards, right? And if you haven't figured that out by now, like you're behind on the game. It's like the U.S. doesn't produce anything. They have unsustainable debt levels times a trillion. People's wealth is in the stock market, which is and real estate. And both of those asset classes in the U.S. are basically just inflated asset classes that rely on the debt market in a low interest rate environment. And those things are in trouble, both of them. That's not good. And that'll play out however they decide to play it out economically. No one has savings. So it's not like, You know, it's not like people have, you know, even if the dollar holds its value, right? It's not like people have even that kind of wealth to fall back on. Certainly most people don't have real wealth, right? People consider real estate real wealth, but what is real estate worth without a functioning debt market? Not much in the US. Farmland would be probably hold its value. Rural land to some degree would definitely hold its value. So, all that stuff is going on. It brings me to, you know, just sort of brings me to like decisions matter. And, this isn't me like slam dunking saying I told you so on a 6-foot rim or something, but it's like, you know, but I don't mean you, I mean like whoever's listening, but it's like, you know, it's like, I moved to Ecuador 9 years ago and went through some really tough times here in that adjustment. Right. And 9 years and looked like an idiot for a lot of that, you know, as far as, I'm screaming from the mountaintops, you know, in 2012, like, you know, this is going to happen and that's going to happen.
Travel restrictions, injection passports, it's right. All coming. And then it's right. Like, you know, the crickets for 8 years or something like that.
Yeah. And asset prices keep going up. Right. Yeah. And if I had kept my real estate in New York, you know, it would have doubled or something over that period of time. Right.
Yeah.
So, and I'm here like losing money in a socialist country for a while, you know, getting my ass kicked, not knowing what I'm doing down here for the first few years. And it's like, it's really come a full circle where now, you know, now the US is actually in that place now that I was telling everyone about so strongly back then. And here I am in a place where there's no winter and where there's no real connections to the things that inflation, affect. So, you know, this
affects food prices, and Ecuador is a huge food producer.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So it's really, you know, it's right. So the point is not, I'm so cool. The point is decisions matter. You know, it's like taking stock of things and then making decisions on the basis of that sort of feeling and that analysis and how you want your life to be and what it's going to be levered to and what, you know, what you want to be affected by and not be affected by and all these kinds of things, it matters. And I'm watching those decisions I made in 2012. Like, I'm very comfortable. My economic life is better than it's ever been. My businesses and all of it, I'm having more fun than I've ever had. And, you know, here we are like in the collapse, it seems, at this point. That's all.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. And I'm reminded, I have some family members and, you know, like in-laws in town. And I was having a conversation with one of them and
that's ballsy. You were talking to them, huh?
Yeah. No, it came out that one of them got the injection and she didn't want to. And I was like, I told you, and I asked you, you know, what's your plan? She was, you know, like, I told you, you know, a year before this happened, that this was going to happen. They're going to make you, and, you know, you're going to have to make a decision. And she was like, yeah, but they made me. And it was like, I didn't have a choice. And it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, you didn't do anything. You didn't prepare for having to make that decision. You didn't do anything to sort of, you know, make it so that you didn't have to make that decision or make it so that you could have said no. And so, you know, luckily doesn't seem like anything's happened, but, you know, she didn't want to go through with it, but she felt like she had to. And here we are. So yeah, decisions matter. And, you know, I mean, I'm feeling really good about where I am still, despite what the U.S. might look like. You know, getting back to economics too, I think there's a couple things that are playing out. I don't know if you've heard these terms, but so number one is the Cantillon effect. Have you heard that one?
No.
So the Cantillon effect is where you have a rich, powerful nation that could have the reserve currency. They produce a lot of stuff and they export that stuff to around the world. The population gets wealthy, and the costs of labor continues to go up because, you know, they're wealthy, and, you know, in order to get them to work, you have to pay them more. The cost to produce goes up, and then the places where they export their goods start to produce those goods and then sell them into that country. And so they're able, because their labor prices are much cheaper, they're able to produce goods, and they're able to produce goods at a cheaper cost, and essentially hollows out the manufacturing or the production base of the initial country. And it goes from wealth to poverty very quickly. And I think that's exactly what's playing out in the US. We were the industrial powerhouse for a long time. We were the wealthiest nation of all for a long time. But then we stopped producing stuff and rely on a consumption-based economy, services-based economy. And it's going to be really difficult to bring back manufacturing because you still have high wages and a population that's not very interested in working. Nope. So, so you have that going on. And then the other thing that I think is playing out is, I don't know if you've heard, it's Brent Johnson, not the Brent Johnson that we interviewed, but a different Brent Johnson, sort of like a economist hedge fund guy. I think it was him who came up with what he's calling the dollar milkshake theory, where even as the fundamentals say that the dollar should be weak in terms of, you know, the low interest rates, money printing, QE stimulus, and a hollowed out production, you know, similar to the Cantillon effect that I just described. But at the same time, though, you have so much of the world's debt is denominated in dollars, and therefore there's still a very high demand for dollars. And as countries sort of go deeper and deeper into debt, they have a higher and higher demand for dollars. And so you're going to have a strengthening of the dollar relative to other currencies, not relative to the goods and services that we're purchasing, because those prices are getting more expensive, but relative to other currencies. And so we're kind of in between a rock and a hard place with, you know, do we satisfy the needs of the domestic population, which needs higher interest rates. You know, we need to slow the inflation that's going on within the country. But the worldwide economy needs low interest rates because a lot of their debt is denominated in dollars. They need dollars to pay it back. So there's a high demand for dollars, and they need low interest rates in order to stay current with their debt payments. And so that's kind of what he's describing as the dollar milkshake theory. And that says that the dollar is going to strengthen, obviously, until it doesn't, you know, and then it's going to, you know, sort of come crashing down. And I think those two things are playing out pretty much as they described in the Cantillon effect and the dollar milkshake theory by Brent Johnson. And so, I don't know if you have any thoughts on that or.
Yeah, I mean, it's like how many, you just want as few layers between yourself and your life, like your goods and services, as possible. You know, I think that's really the conclusion of all this, right? It's a system that was designed and intended to collapse at some point and put you in a tough spot, right? That's starting with the money system. That's how it's designed. And then if you look at the macro or the high level decisions, policy decisions that have been made in the United States over the last we're in 2020, 70 years, I would say, something like that. You know, it's been to put as many levels and layers of stuff between what you do in your life, like eating and drinking and having a home and your activities and where you get your money, your how you support yourself and where your kids, all that stuff between that stuff and you. So it's this very complex system, right? Where, you know, where there's all of these players involved and you know, your chicken gets produced in North Carolina and then shipped to China and then shipped back to North Carolina and then distributed through the whole country. And, you know, and it's all based on, you know, everything has to go right and be perfect for that to have, but don't, but it's, you know, it's 6 cents cheaper. So it's great. Right. And we're not going to worry about the arsenic. And so, right. And, but it's like, so they've done that with everything. And they've set this up, right? They've set up this house of cards. And so the end game, or the conclusion of that is you just don't want the system between you and your survival, right? You don't want the system to be you don't want to be levered to the system. You know, you want as little stuff between you and your activities and your food and your this and your that as you can, because we're in that time where that system is coming down. And there just isn't, we can't wish our way out of that. In fact, and it's really good, right? Like the system needs to come down. A, it was designed to come down. So there's not another outcome that can happen. But B, it's evil and fucked up. So we need it to come down. So that's great. So we just want to have the least amount of pain, I suppose, possible, right? If that's your goal, you know, as that system comes down. So just, you know, to me, that's the conclusion, is just that the you know, set your life up that way, because there's not another option other than to go through a lot of pain as the system comes down. And the excuses, you know, you mentioned your in-law or something, your family member, that, you know, that we're just not in a time where excuses can be fine for 10 years anymore or can work, right? We're in a time of absolute total self-responsibility. Like that's just what we're in. So we can, you know, we can be 6 years old if we want, but the results, the ramifications of that are coming like boom. It's not like, oh, later in life you're gonna have to deal with it in some way. At some point it's gonna come back around and you have to grow up and mature. And no. It's like, you might not have food next year, you know, it's like, you might be dead. Like, right. So yeah, I mean, it's just, it is what it is. Right. And we just have to face it, put our big boy pants on or whatever. Right. And, you know, and face it and make good decisions and do what we need to do for our families and for ourselves and our lives and our communities. And all of us doing that, you know, builds a beautiful world. And I think, you know, that's unfolding in many ways, in many places. And that's very beautiful for me to see. But it's just, that's where we're at here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. And it goes back to sort of what we've been talking about on this show since the beginning, is to localize your supply chains, especially your food, and be as resilient and self-reliant as you can. You know, that was probably maybe our first message that we started talking about, you know, what was that, about a year ago we started this thing, something like that. And yeah, I mean, you know, it was true then and it's even more true now. I mean, you know, maybe not even more true, because the things that we were talking about then are happening. You know, do we have a crystal ball? No, but we can see the plan and we can, you know, sort of read the economic tea leaves. And so yeah, when you say you might not have food next year, I think that's going to be a sobering reality for a lot of people. You know, like, I think Ukraine is a huge producer of wheat for the world. Like they produce something like 40% of the world's wheat, something like that. Russia produces like 60% of the world's fertilizer. And so with everything going on there, you have less farmers planting less of their fields. And and at higher prices because the prices of fertilizer has gone up. They can't plant as much of their fields, and there's going to be less food available, literally, and at higher prices. So, so that's going to be, you know, a lot of people on the margin are going to get squeezed out of being literally being able to buy food. And then when the average household spends more than 40% of their budget on food, there's riots every time, like clockwork. And so, also the stuff that I just mentioned, you know, the fertilizer, the, you know, less production of food, that doesn't show up right away. You know, it takes some time for that to impact what you see on the grocery store shelves. So the stuff that's planted or wasn't planted this spring, it gets harvested in the fall, gets sent to, you know, to the various processing centers, and then doesn't show up in on grocery stores until at least like the winter. And so it takes time for these things to make its way through the, you know, the production, you know, process. And so we haven't yet seen the impacts of this, you know, just a little bit, you know, with higher transportation costs that's driving increase in food prices and the rest of it. But in terms of the real increase, that's going to happen this winter. And I think people are going to be surprised as to how much prices increase. And that's already a shortage. When price increase, you know, when prices increase like that, that's the shortage right there. And, you know, so it could be that there's like shortages in terms of empty shelves. And especially if you're on the margin, you know, there's already countries out there who are banning the export of certain food products.
And that's going to happen too.
Yeah. And that's going to happen even more because they know they have to try to feed their domestic population. And so, you know, they're going to ban the exports, keep the food for themselves as much as possible. And, you know, this also hasn't, you know, we at least haven't seen that yet, but it's going to show up. It's going to show up in time, you know, this fall, this winter. Even Biden was, you know, I think we mentioned this, but Biden was warning about food shortages. And I think, you know,
they always tell you.
I think people should take that seriously.
Maybe the only thing they should take seriously that Joe Biden said.
Right. Yeah. I mean, then the other thing is like in terms of this is another classic boom bust cycle. You know, they let cheap money, easy money flow, you know, people, you know, go into debt, they purchase assets and, you know, and they do it with cheap money. But then all of a sudden they rein in interest rates, they raise interest rates. All of a sudden your debt payments are unaffordable, and then prices crash and the, you know, the wealthy elite go up and buy up all these assets for pennies on the dollar. And this is something, you know, consolidates wealth, and it's something that happens over and over and over again in history. I think the classic example is Nathaniel Rothschild spreading rumors that the French won the war between the English and the French, and, you know, everyone was selling everything on the London Stock Exchange. And then he went in and bought everything up for pennies on the dollar. So, or pennies on the pound. And, you know, and so they do this all the time. So this is not something that we should be surprised at. You know, you need to look back at history to see what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, well, the wealth cycle stuff, it's sort of wealth cycle 101 stuff.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. And I've also noticed too, there's lots of reports of, you know, governments basically forcing various food producers to destroy various crops for various reasons.
Yeah, bird flu. Yeah, they're killing millions of chickens because of the so-called bird flu or whatever. I don't know if that's what you're talking about, but
yeah. Well, that's one of many. So yeah. That's happening in all kinds of ways. And so you're getting, you know, you're getting a confluence of events, right? I get Simon Black's newsletter, The Sovereign Man. He's a great writer. He does his blogs, when I take the time to read them, which is very rare, and they're short, but they're really good. And he had a hilarious little anecdote in his last one where, you know, this is the genius of government. This is why we all need government in our lives. So in Puerto Rico, they have some law from the U.S. that says that all food, I don't know if it's all goods or if it's all food, but all food items that are shipped into Puerto Rico have to be what's called U.S. flagged, which means that any food item coming from anywhere in the world first has to go to the U.S., get unloaded, get reloaded onto a U.S. flag ship, and then brought to Puerto Rico, which means that the entire island is dealing with stuff that's not fresh. Right? Like, you can't get fresh food because it first has to, it has an extra 3-5 days or so, you know, it has an extra several days built in, and of course costs, like those things are not free. You know, these are the layers I'm talking about, right? Like, you just, if we just had another rule or another law, I think we'll definitely regulate ourselves to prosperity any day now.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, then there's food producing factories catching on fire all over the place. I don't know if you've seen that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it could get wild out there. So, you know,
it was so funny though. I was out, you know, not yesterday in Zapotillo with these two guys, and you know, one of them is sort of like a somewhat of a business partner of mine. His family runs probably the largest like infrastructure company in the area. You know, they have all the heavy equipment, and they do like large scale infrastructure projects and blah, blah, blah. And then the other guy's in agriculture. And so, you know, these guys are showing me some properties, and we're checking out the area and just kind of getting familiar with it. And, you know, they're lamenting that, that the government doesn't give any help to the agricultural sector.
Like, you don't want help
in Ecuador. Right. And I'm like sitting there like, yeah. And then, you know, in my head, I'm like, perfect. You know, and then they're like, one of the guys is like, yeah, the problem is, you know, people get into, you know, they were talking about onions, for example, right? They're like, right now people are making millions and bazillions off of onions, but you know, the market is crazy. It goes up, it goes down. And then we're talking about rice, and they were like, they just need the government to say, okay, there's too much production of rice now.
Oh, God.
We need you to stop producing rice. And you know, if we had that, then that would be helpful. And it's just amazing to me the way people think or lack thereof.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, where that line of thinking ends is what you've got brewing in the U.S. right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's where that ends.
Yeah. Well, you need a minister of rice production, minister of onions, because they know exactly how much it should, how much should be produced and how much you should sell it for. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. If we just had that, things,
they're really good at that.
Right.
And it always works. Just look at China, man.
Yeah. Right.
Cuba,
right? Yeah.
Venezuela, right. It works every time.
Well, it just hasn't been, you know, true communism hasn't ever been tried. So until we have an example of true communism, not just the fake one and the ones, you know, then you can't say that. So
thank you for correcting me. I agree fully.
Right. Well, and then they tried the Ministry of Truth here in the U.S. that lasted, I don't know, it lasted at least a couple weeks, and I think they had to stop it because you know, the disinformation czar was caught caught posting disinformation. So, you know, who could have predicted that?
Yeah. What a world, man. We hired a millennial for the first time recently. From the States. Right. So in Ecuador doesn't have any of that stuff. Right. So Ecuador, yeah. You know, we have tons of young Ecuadorians working for us, and they kick, you know, they're so grateful for the opportunity, and we treat them great and we pay them great. And so they're, you know, they kick ass for us. They're awesome. They'll learn anything we want them to learn. They're motivated. Like, you know, you got to train them. They don't necessarily have the skill set coming in that they might have from the States, but they're not, you know, they're sharp and they're motivated, and that's all you need. Right. So, so that's great. But we hired our first American millennial. He's like, or I don't know, maybe he's the next thing after millennial, whatever that is, like Gen something.
Gen Z, I think.
And he's like maybe 24.
Okay.
And he's a nice kid. I really wanted to hire him because he has a great skill set. But this thing happened that I couldn't understand. I wanted to fire him like on the spot. Yeah. And we're having an internal conversation about it. And like one of my team members explained to me what's going on. And I was like, oh, you're right. But this thing happened where he got really snarky, and he made these disrespectful statements, like in these text messages, basically was insulting us and insulting our business and our ideas. Right. And here's this 24-year-old kid who's literally dead broke, has accomplished absolutely nothing in his entire life. And, you know, here we are running lots of businesses. Like, we're very much, you know, in the mentor seat when it comes to the relationship, right? If I was him, I'd be learning from us, you know? And he's basically talking shit in this text exchange. And I'm sitting there looking at it like totally like flat, like just dumbfounded. Like what is happening? What is this? I couldn't understand. And I didn't say anything. But in my head, I'm like, you're fired, you know, and then one of the guys that we, you know, one of the management level guys sends us this text, and he's like, well, he's a millennial. And he's like, I think this is what's happening. I think this is that thing that everyone, and I start thinking about it. I'm like, oh, this is what everyone's talking about. You're right. This is some like entitled, doesn't want to work. Thinks he knows everything. We're idiots because we're 10, 15 years older, 10, you know, however much older we are, blah, 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 blah. And it was just, it was so interesting to see that, how that looks. Cause it is, woo, it's a thing. I hadn't experienced it
before. Yeah. I was about to say, it was like, what you're forgetting is that he knows everything. And, and so he's definitely right. So
we didn't fire him though.
You didn't fire him, did you?
I shut my mouth and just, I could, if I spoke, he would have gotten fired. So I stayed out of it. One of my business partners has taken him under his wing and is like had the conversation and is like seeing if we can get him in gear here. Yeah. It's been a couple of weeks since then. He seems to be doing all right. Okay. He definitely, you know, and he lost my support and he felt that, and he's been like trying to get that back ever since. So I'm slowly, you know, trying to be nice to him, but I'm one of those people that kind of, once you cross me, like, yeah, it's kind of, I don't have a whole lot of like more, you know, I'm not angry about it. I'm not upset. I'm not vengeful, anything like that. I'm just kind of done, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm doing my best to not do that and give him another chance, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. That's a tough one. Luckily, I've been very blessed with the team that we have. We have, everyone is, let's see. I mean, yeah, there's a couple millennial age people, but none of them have that attitude. Yeah, that'd be crazy.
But no, it was, I mean, I like, I couldn't, I was like, did I read that right? Did he just insult us?
Like you're forgetting he knows everything. That's the thing. Like,
and the poor kid, I mean, he was like, he rolled into town with like 6 cents to his name. like desperately need. We hooked them up. We got them an apartment.
Yeah.
You know, we paid out the first half of the month up front so he could have some money, the whole nine.
And now he's insulting you because he knows better.
Yeah.
On the job for 3 weeks and he knows everything already.
Yeah, right. Like a couple of weeks.
He must be really smart.
He's pretty smart, bro. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. So I think it's just indicative, right, of some of the sort of difficult side of hey buddy, I'm recording right now. Don't do that, please. Come here and sit with me if you want. It's sort of indicative of some of the issues that the U.S. has, right, and other places like it, because you have this sort of fat, lazy, sick, you know, entitled population with not much of a skill set. And so, you know, what do you do in that? What does that environment and scenario look like in the face of difficult times where the system is not fully functioning and you don't have cheap goods and services and food and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. We have a Jamia in the comment and in the chat. She says, my son is a millennial and he says he's smarter than just about everyone else, but yet he doesn't keep a job and he thinks we should try communism. We can't talk about a lot of issues. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, and that is a huge issue, because you have these incredibly entitled, don't want to work, think they know better than you, and think that the work that is, you know, think that there's work that's beneath them. You know, oh, I have a college degree. I wouldn't you know, be a plumber or an electrician. You know, I have a college degree. I have a degree in sociology, you know. And that's going to, you know, we're already starting to see that with, like, you know, you can't, it's a month before you can get a plumber to come out or something like that. You know, it's a long time. You have to wait to get your car fixed or your AC repaired or something like that. These types of issues are going to continue to get worse and worse. So on one hand, you know, it's a good idea to learn these skills for yourself. And I'm, you know, talking to myself about this because, you know, I don't know how to do much of that stuff.
No, yeah, me neither. I'm an entitled American too. We're not immune from this stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So, like, you know, so on one hand, these problems are going to get worse. You know, less, you know, entitled people, you know, want to be communists, you know, think work is beneath them, think that the government should provide for them, think that other people should provide for them, basically coddled, spoiled brats. And so that's on one hand. But then on the other hand, it's like, what an incredible opportunity. If this, there's no better time to, you know, to lift yourself up and develop a skill that will be useful to people, you know, like fixing air conditioners, fixing heaters, fixing plumbing. You know, these are great careers that you can get by just being an apprentice. You know, if you have a work ethic and a desire to succeed, you can learn on the job some of these things. Like we just had our septic system pumped. That guy, high school, maybe he graduated high school, but he is definitely making, he's a one man shop. He has a truck, one of those, you know, things that he pumps septic systems. He has a truck. He's a one man shop, built his website. He has all 5-star reviews because he does really good work. And I guarantee you, he's making 6 figures, you know, like
maybe multiple 6 figures.
Yeah. Like I guarantee you, because he does good work. He shows up on time. He shows up, you know, like it's a septic system. It, you know, that's, you know, he got to deal with that right away. And he shows up and he does a good job and he gets paid for it. And, you know, he doesn't have a college degree. He's not in student loan debt. Like, he never went to college. That was never for him. He knew that. He figured out a skill that he could develop and learn. And then he's his own boss, and he's making good money. I think he has 4 kids. He's doing great. And, he was saying he was having trouble finding workers because everyone wants $1,000 a week to dig holes so that they can learn the job. And he's like, I just can't do that. You know, I can't pay people $1,000 a week to dig holes. And that's the least, you know, anyone would ever come out and learn that skill. So if you do have, you know, a work ethic and just a small amount of common sense and forward thinking, you can get one of these skills and build that business to whatever your ambition is. If you want to be a one-man shop, go ahead and do that. If you want to build the next, you know, plumbing, I don't know. Yeah. Then go ahead and do that, because the opportunities are going to be incredible.
Yeah. And all of the social justice, majors, I don't know, is that a major yet? If it's not, it will be soon. Yeah. all the gender study majors, you know, their skill set is not headed for great value in the marketplace. Yeah. We have a bit of a shift there. I want to go back to the comment, because it's, we're laughing and because it's funny, but it is also really sad. Right. And on an individual level, like for the mother or the father dealing with that, like, ugh, right. What a difficult position to be in. And it really, to me, what it points out is just the importance of having control over your nuclear family, right?
Yeah.
It's like the state would like to raise your kids. The television would like to raise your kids. The media companies would like to raise your kids. Facebook would like to raise your kids. Your kids' friends who are influenced by all that would like to raise your kids. The other moron parents who have been brainwashed would like to sort of social pressure you into having your kids be a certain way and so on and so forth. And where does that end? That ends with a lack of aligned family values, right? Mm-hmm. That ends with, a 15-year-old who's like, fuck you, mom. You know, I know everything and I'm going to cut my dick off now because that's cool these days, right? So, that's where that ends, right? And so you've got parents, lots of parents probably are looking at their kids like they're aliens and vice versa. Because they sent them to the state to raise them, right? They sent them they put them in front of the TV, they sent them to the state, they allowed them to be influenced, they let them have phones and computers and all that crap. And yeah, they're not really yours anymore, right? They're state property to some degree. And so it just really points out the necessity for me. You know, I don't fucking raise my kids like that, like my kids are under my supervision. If I see that there's any weirdness going on, where I don't like something they're looking at or they're being, I'm that's cut off and gone. Right. I mean, there's no way that's going to happen. And as long as you do that, I'm not controlling about it either. I'm very much a free range parent, so to speak. Right. But as long as you do that, like, the kids don't have any interest in that. It's just, you can explain to them, like, look, this is what this stuff does to you. Here, let's watch this for a half an hour. Take it away. Now, how do you feel right now? They know. They're sitting there like, right? Like, you can show them that. It's not difficult. Like, kids are not stupid. It's just that the repetitive programming that they get at school and from the TV and from all of it, over time, it takes hold and it ingrains. And so, again, it's like, you don't want the layers or the systems between you and your stuff, and your kids are probably the most important, aspect of that.
Yeah. That's a great point. And then, to be on the same page with both parents, I'm remembering a conversation where, so my oldest, she's 7. We sent her to a private Christian school, this past year. And, you know, it's okay. It's not great. But it's certainly better than public. They didn't do any of the measures that were asked of schools during any part of the quote unquote pandemic. And so, you know, so it was much better in that regard. But, you know, it's still a school with that sort of mindset of like, oh, you know, go to school, go to college, get a good job, all that stuff. And my daughter came home one day, she was talking about college. And my wife and I were like, well, we're not so sure about you going to college. You know, we don't think that's such a great investment. And it was both me and my wife were, you know, lockstep on the same page with, you know, our thoughts about college and it not being a good idea. And so, but there's many other avenues that people are going to be able to go to, you know, to go through to be a success. And college is going to be probably the worst option for most people, you know? And so, you know, that's just an example of the mindset that I have in my life and my wife shares as well. And so, you know, we have a neighbor who's a builder. I'm going to send my sons off as soon as they're old enough to learn under him.
Yeah.
You know, and just, you know, hey, help this guy out, do whatever he says, and he's going to teach you.
Right. And then you have that skill for the rest of your life, no matter what you do with it.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
I mean, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, that's my plan is with them is to find people that they can learn under and just, you know, help them out, do whatever he says and learn. And
yeah, what a shocking, you know, what a weird strategy, like learn from the people who know, like that's crazy, man. You got what you need to find is a professor.
Yeah, right.
they know. No, I mean, yeah. College
toxic is, patriarchy right there.
College is hilarious. I mean, it's literally you're paying for something that's free. Like we're in the information age. It wasn't always free. So I'm not saying that, you know, 40 years ago or something, you know.
Yeah, it could have been a good idea 50 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally.
But we're in a time now where literally everything that they're going to teach you is free online. 100% of it is free online, including the classes. Like you can
you can take Harvard courses for free online. Yeah.
And even beyond that, there's like several institutions now that have been set up that are free that do exactly what college does. So you're paying for free information and you're paying to be brainwashed. Like you're literally saying like, I'm handing, here's 60 grand or 80 grand or 40 grand, or whatever it costs these days
per year.
Per year,
yeah.
For you to brainwash me for the next 9 months, and then the people you're learning from have been teaching for the last 20 years. They don't know a fucking thing about anything. Like they literally don't know about anything, and you're supposed to learn from them.
But they think they do, and that's what's important.
Right. No. And then right. You finish that with debt.
Yeah.
And no skills, debt.
Debt that's
wasted 4 years of
your
life.
Debt that you can't discharge through bankruptcy.
Oh, I didn't even know that. That's
no, you cannot. Student loan debt is the only debt that you cannot discharge through bankruptcy. They are what they're doing with that is
not evil at all.
Yeah, no, like, and it makes it so that you can't go out and do your own thing. You have to get an income paying job. You can't like go out and start your own practice as a doctor. You're in $6,000-$8,000 a month of student loan debt as a doctor. Like, what do you do? And that's why, like,
you work your brains out. That's right.
Yeah. You can't get fired from your job as a doctor in that situation. So you just have to go along. And that's how they get everyone, you know, saying the same thing about a particular disease. So
my sister finished paying her student loan debt around 50. She was around 50 years old when she finished.
Wow.
Yeah. There was one other thing I wanted to say. Oh yeah. Right. So there's this guy in town right now, right? Really cool guy. It's, you know, I'm a pretty smart guy and I have some experience in investing in real estate investing and my brain works well. And so I don't it's not every day that I, it's very rare really that I get, that I meet somebody that I'm like, ooh, this person's smarter than me and I can learn from them. Mm-hmm. Not that I learn pieces of things from all kinds of people all the time, but usually like I can outthink most people I'm talking to. And I'm talking, you know, I sort of meet this guy and, you know, he's, I realize the level he's on. I look him up online. I read, I'm like, ooh, you know, this guy's a legit real estate investor, several, you know, two or three levels higher than I'm currently at. And I get to know him a little bit and I realize he's sharp as fuck. You know, he's really smart. He's smarter than I am. And he has experience that I don't have. And I'm, you know, so I'm interacting with this guy and it's like, yeah, my only goal in the relationship right now, and he might invest with us on some stuff, but my only goal in the relationship is like maximize my exposure so that I can learn from what he knows.
You didn't send him snarky text messages.
No, I didn't send him any
insulting him.
I did whatever he asked as best as I possibly could. And, you know, so, and you know, he made a comment to me. So this is an uber successful guy, right? Uber successful. You know, what to me are really large amounts of money, to him are very small amounts of money. You know, we're talking and he said to me, he said, you know, I spent years learning from the best real estate investors in the world. And he said, what I did was I just went to work for them for free. Mm-hmm. He said, basically I was their bitch. Mm-hmm. And I learned and look, I'm telling you, I know this business. This is my business. The guy is a real estate genius. I've watched the way his brain works on, he can make calculations like in 30 seconds that takes me much longer than that. And you know, so it's just, you know, driving home that point, right? If you want to accomplish something in the world, it doesn't matter what it is. It's the theme of the day, right? It's the theme of life, you know, self-responsibility. So if you want to accomplish something, you have to accomplish it. And the best way to do that is to engage your mind, engage your body, look at the resources around you, come up with a great game plan and execute it. And that, you know, of course is going to involve asking people and spending time with people and getting, you know, learning from people who know more than you, who can teach you, depending on the system, which is telling you, hey, go to college, you know, go to college, get a job, blah, 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 blah. The whole like spiel that we've all heard our whole life ends with you on the hamster wheel, finishing paying your student loan debt when you're 50, if you're lucky, and being tied in to a career, which you're levered to for all the reasons you mentioned. And the fact that just psychologically to not do something connected to your degree, whatever the fuck that means, some stupid piece of paper that some socialist institution gave you, right? To not do what's connected to your degree that everyone's patting you on the back for. Oh, you graduated college. Good job. Right. They've never done anything in their life either. Right. So now you're not going to do anything in your life either, because you guys are on, you know, you guys are the same, but they'll pat you on the back. And that feels good. Right. So, you know, so it's just, yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, no, it's a mindset shift that people, you know, especially parents right now, they have to get over that. With their kids, it's like, you know, college is not a good way to go in this time. Like, it's a horrible investment. And so, but people are so, you know, we have like a middle school mentality where it's like everyone, you know, you have to have the best clothes, your kids have to go to the best schools, otherwise that you don't look as good around your peer group. And it's just such a juvenile way of looking at the world, we have to get over that. I remember, and I think I've told this story on the podcast here, it's like when this was got to be like 8 years ago, when I was still working in corporate, you know, still at a corporate job downtown Boston. They had all the benefit stuff set up, you know, I think you could do, I think it's like a 529 something, where you could set aside money for your children's college. And so, you know, when everyone found out that my wife and I were having a baby, they were like, oh, you should set up, you should sign up for this program so you can save for your kids' college. And I was like, she's not going to college, or you know. And this was 8 years ago when I knew how bad of a deal college was, and how, you know, just the whole paradigm shift of, you know, go to school, get a job, it was changing. And so, you know, this was 8 years ago where I was like, no, I'm not saving for college. That's stupid. So it's just something that people need to get over psychologically, because we're in this like keep up with Joneses mentality of, you know, your kids you have to drive the nicest cars, and you have to send your kids to the best schools, and you know, you're less if your kid goes to a state school as opposed to a private school or something like that. It's just stupid. So one of the many paradigms that's crumbling.
Yep. All right, man, I got to jump out of here. I'm going to play basketball, which is my favorite activity pretty much of the week. I'm up to 3 days a week. That's a lot of freaking fun, man. I feel like a kid again. My knee is cooperating. I get to go out there. Good. Listen, we bring music. It's like we're 16 again. We bring music. We talk shit. Everyone else smokes weed. I do not. And the knee is good. And then and the level of competition right now is down because the guys that are most fun to play with are like traveling right now. So I'm dominating. That's good for the ego. Nice.
I need to get back playing.
It's under the sun too, which I appreciate. Yeah. So anyhow, it's good to be back and chat with you always, Asher. And hopefully we can make some time for this occasionally, because it is fun. And I think, you know, there might be a person or two out there that get some value out of it possibly. And like that.
All right, man. Yeah, it was great talking with you, and we'll talk to everyone later.
Awesome. Have a great day, dude. See you.
All right. Bye.